This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org. Art is Her Story, Artists Reception and Sale, Wednesday, December 17th at 6 p.m. at the Beltrami County History Center. The event celebrates the women artists who have shared their time, creativity, and teaching expertise with the community throughout the year. The Brainerd Noon Sartoma Club presents Winter Wonderland, a drive-through light display at Northland Arboretum in Brainerd. It runs Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays from 5:30 to 8, plus the full week between Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. Advance tickets available at BrainerdNoonSartoma.org. Northwoods Friends of the Arts and Cook presents It Starts With an Idea, a multimedia exhibit by Mary Lou Ellison, now through December 27th. Thanks for listening to KXE KBXE.
Let me think for a second. What do I want to start? Alexa, download the first Bonnie Raitt album. You know, the one with Willie Murphy. Yeah, that's it.
Michael, I just wanted to say to everybody out there, happy shopping this season.
Thanks, Doris. That's Doris Kaloji. We'll hear more from her in this hour. I'm Michael Goldberg with Stay Human. Let's go shopping.
Before I read
From Shovels and Rope, Coping Mechanism. It's all part of our mission here at Stay Human. And here's another important public service announcement. There's only about 250 shopping hours left before Christmas. I hope you're coping all right. I know a lot of folks must be hitting that go to checkout button or out at actual stores. Oh no, not you, probably. You're the kind of person that likes to give handmade gifts, little tokens of appreciation, and maybe, frugally, sometimes, something special for special someones. It does add up, though. By the end of last June, Americans had a combined balance due on their credit cards of, roll out the zeros, $1,230 billion. And almost half of those cardholders are making minimum payments each month, so it keeps going up. So yeah, people need their coping mechanisms for sure, especially in troubled times like now. My favorite of all the imaginary numbers economists come up with is called the Consumer Confidence Index, and those learned men who measure it all the time say it's dropping fast. But friends, let's be confident. Don't despair. We've made it through tough times before. Remember the COVID lockdown, the crash of 2008? Alexa, what did President Bush tell the nation when the World Trade Towers came down?
As we work with Congress in the coming year to chart a new course in Iraq and strengthen our military to meet the challenges of the 21st century, we must also work together to achieve important goals for the American people here at home. This work begins with keeping our economy growing. And I encourage you all to go shopping more. And I encourage you all to go shopping more. And I encourage you all to go shopping more. Go shopping more. Go shopping more.
You slay. We won't go sending off our own to play with gung-ho fodder there to pave our way to crimson oceans. Let's go shopping. Let's go shopping. Let's go shopping.
I asked my friend Doris Kaloji if she's been doing much shopping.
This is a season for shopping, that's for sure. But I just have to be honest, serious business, and say that I have never been able in my whole life, and I'm pretty old now, right? I've never been able to shop without guilt or without feeling embarrassed. I really envy those women that can shop with no guilt. I've always wanted to be one of those people that feels no shame. Because, you know, your intellect part of your brain says it's embarrassing, right? As Americans, we all have too much. And then we live in Minnesota, the state with the Mall of America. It's like the cathedral to conspicuous consumption. How embarrassing is that? But I always wanted to be one of those women that could use shopping kind of for feel-good therapy. But I always just feel too guilty. But I got to tell you, my friend Carla in Minneapolis, man, she found a solution. She needs to shop. And I'm not kidding. She needs that shopping, buying, two separate things, by the way, shopping and purchasing things. She needs that fix. So she shops habitually, compulsively at Savers, you know, that thrift shop, that big giant thrift shop on Lake Street there in Minneapolis. She buys stuff, tons of stuff, cheap enough that it's almost like she could haul it back to the thrift shop in a few weeks and then buy it again. I mean, if it felt really good buying it the first time, imagine how good it would feel the second time. Serious business. Michael, my husband's a school teacher, right? He has 200 neckties, not making this up. He has about 200 neckties, and he wears them all, almost everyone he wears all year, different tie every year. But he has 200 neckties, and most of them came from my friend Carla in Minneapolis that shops for therapy. So that's my goal this season, serious business, to try to shop with no guilt. First, I think you have to, like, dress up to go shopping. You have to feel like you're going somewhere to do something so you look good and you feel good. And I just know that I need to get some serious therapeutic value out of this. You know, I want to be able, honest to God, I want to be able to walk out of a store with one of those cool designer bags, you know, one of those shopping bags with the handles. I don't even care, or if it's L&M Supply. I don't even care. I want to be able to walk out of the store with attitude, you know, just with my head up and kind of swinging that shopping bag, kind of carry it low and swing in a little bit like they do on the commercials. Yeah, that's my goal this year, is to try to not feel guilty about the shopping. So if you see, Michael, if you see somebody, anywhere, you know, around KAXE land, northern Minnesota, if you see somebody coming out of a store, just, you know, some old lady like myself with a spring in her step, just, you know, kind of like, take that, baby. It'll probably be me.
My mama told me, you better shop around. Oh, yeah, you better shop around.
After I got off the phone with Doris, I asked if I could speak to Mr. Kaloji, the man with 200 neckties. Really?
You know, that is no lie. It's not an exaggeration. And I said, but I didn't go shopping for him. I don't know if I bought any ties. I'm sure there have been one or two. I think my first fish tie, I think I probably shopped for myself. But otherwise, I let other people shop for my ties. And I feel like I'm doing a public service that way. And certainly, it seems like for every child, having a father that wears ties really simplifies the whole dilemma of the holidays and birthdays and so on. Because you just buy the old man a tie, right? You take care of things. So I have a holiday tie that takes care of me every workday between now and actual Christmas. Heck, I can stretch it out till Serbian Christmas if I want to. I got a lot of ties. I got ties for all occasions. So, but I say shop till you drop. I mean, it seems like that's what people are inclined to do. Even though, as we all know, you can't buy love and you can't buy happiness. I'm not sure you could buy an election, but you can shop. You know, I often shop and I don't buy anything. I realize that I get some satisfaction out of shopping, but I don't get that much satisfaction out of buying. I mean, there's buyer's remorse, but there's not shopper's remorse, you know. I mean, nobody ever really got on your case for window shopping. Well, actually, that's not true. I've been window shopping with other people, and they were window shopping. I don't like that much. So when I'm looking at stuff, I like that. So, I mean, I might look at bikes or skis or other sort of useful things, right? As long as they're tools. Oh, man, gosh, looking at tools. But not dumb stuff, you know. That's a whole other story. I'm not going to say who looks for dumb stuff. Nobody in this house, that's for sure. But I realized when you brought this topic up that I like the process of shopping. And I wonder if it goes back to prehistory, if shopping isn't sort of a stand-in for hunting, right, for hunting and gathering at least. And maybe when you shop for something big like a house, you know, or a car, that's like big game hunting, you know, that's going for the woolly mammoth. And it might just be in our genes, and we shouldn't feel bad about it. Sometimes, you know, it's useful and practical, like when you shop for groceries. And sometimes it's, you know, kind of exciting, like if you buy a house.
Thanks to Corey Kaloji for putting all this shopping into perspective for me. And, you know, he ought to know. He is a biology teacher, so he has some idea of what makes us tick. Primates in the parking lot, crowding around the doors. The troop is just buzzing with adrenaline. You can feel the cunning and the force. It's chaos on Black Friday, even though they could stay home. It's the gleaming glass, the neon signs, all the things they've got to own, the Xboxes and Apple screens, the rush to get the deal. There's one tightly hugging a box, the victory and the thrill. It's not the having that they crave. The winning is the prize, and anything can set us off. We'll always supersize. Oh, us sapiens, we're not all the same. We compete in many ways, but there's so many ways of keeping score, and others just would rather graze like primates in the produce aisle, touching the leaf and fruit. We all were built for scavenging. We all bring home the loot. That's Patti LaBelle. I know that a lot of parents, if they're shopping for toys for their kids, have an awful lot of calculating they have to do, like how soon before it breaks, or do they need a helmet? Does this require me to be watching them the whole time they use it, or who else could I get to do that? Is it something we could all do together as a family? That'd be cool, but yeah, would we really do it? Sue Searing remembers wanting a game when she was a kid, a game that's been popular for almost 90 years. It's still stacking the shelves in all kinds of updated varieties. If you do decide to buy one to give away, beware the possibility that you'll actually have to play it with them. Storyteller Sue Searing.
I'm so upset. Hasbro, the company that makes Monopoly, asked the public to vote on which tokens to keep and which to retire. And out went the thimble, top hat, and wheelbarrow, replaced with a penguin, a rubber ducky, and a T-Rex. I mean, really, is there no respect for tradition anymore? Though I have to admit, I haven't played Monopoly in a while. The president ruined it for me. Well, you've played the game, right? You know that winning depends on ruthlessly acquiring property, screwing your fellow players, and building big, expensive hotels. Honestly, it's not fun anymore. But of course, as a child, I didn't understand the capitalist principles behind the game. I responded to it on a higher, aesthetic level. From the very first time I played Monopoly, at a friend's house during summer vacation when I was 10, I fell in love with the board itself. The orderly, color-coded streets, low-rent purple Baltic Avenue, solidly middle-class yellow Marvin Gardens, elite royal blue Park Place and Boardwalk. Oh, and the rainbow-colored money! I love to be the banker, sorting and dispensing cash. And the playing pieces, solid cast metal that felt so good in your hand and made a satisfying clunk on the board. The problem was, my parents weren't going to splurge on a new game. Oh, I asked, I lobbied hard, please, can we get Monopoly? They said, we'll see. I think Mom and Dad had some notion that it would traumatize us kids to actually know we were poor, so they seldom came right out and said we couldn't afford things. Just, we'll see. I did have a birthday coming up in August, but my birthday presents were always practical back-to-school items. So summer vacation dragged on and on. I'm bored, I whined, and my younger sisters joined in the chorus. Mom reminded us that an intelligent person is never bored. Dad responded by supplying us with reams of cheap paper and plenty of pencils and crayons. And eventually, our boredom bred creativity. We drew for hours. We wrote. I combined drawing and writing in handmade magazines that featured illustrated stories about a little girl and her magic umbrella. And when I tired of literature, I sewed dresses for my sister's dolls with scraps from the dresses that Mom sewed for us. But I never stopped longing for store-bought games, the games my friends had, especially Monopoly. So I enlisted my sisters to help me make our own Monopoly game. I found a big piece of cardboard and trimmed it to an almost perfect square. I drew boxes around the perimeter and then attempted, from memory, to add the names of the streets, railroads, and utilities. Before long, I was in the kitchen asking Mom, "How do you spell Mediterranean?" "What are you kids up to now?" she said. She followed me back to the playroom where we'd set up our game factory. One of my sisters was carefully coloring in the squares, while the other wrote $1, $5, $20, $100 on little rectangles of colored paper. "See, Mommy? We're making a Monopoly game." Well, in the end, we had to borrow our friend's game to get the spelling right, and also to copy the chance and community chest cards. I don't remember how we made the tokens, though. Nothing produced by children could have been as wonderful as those tiny metal objects. Maybe we abandoned the project before we got that far. Honestly, I don't remember ever actually playing with our cloned Monopoly. And the days and the weeks went by, and then it was August and my 11th birthday. I blew out the candles, and Dad handed me a present. A flat, rectangular box. I supposed it would be school clothes. Maybe that gingham dress with a Peter Pan collar I wanted. But as I tore at the wrapping paper, Dad leaned over and whispered, "We figured you wanted this pretty bad." And then I was staring, in astonishment, happiness, disbelief, at a brand new cellophane-wrapped Monopoly game.
Thanks to Sue Searing. More at SueSearing.com. Still to come in this hour, we'll go to work at an urban Christmas tree lot with Maureen Ellis and get out to the tree farm with Lauren Neamey. That's the Copper Street Brass Quintet with a selection from the score for The Snowman here on KAXE KBXE, People Powered Radio for the North Woods. That short animated film, The Snowman, will be shown in Grand Rapids at the Rife Center on Saturday afternoon, December 20th. It's a gorgeous film. And this will be a very special showing because instead of playing the recorded soundtrack, the complete score will be performed live by the Itasca Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Pedro Oviedo. I'll be there, and I'm hoping to bring at least one or two of my grandchildren. They're in sixth and seventh grade now, so spending an afternoon with us isn't quite the draw it was a few short years ago. And Grandpa is so clueless that I was stunned by Natalia Ray's Christmas wish list. Sol de Janeiro perfume, eyelash curler, bubble skincare, a lip mask? Sixth grade is a whole new world. Some of what's on her list, at least I know what it is. The 67 sweatshirt, scrunchies, blue. Lilo and Stitch Uggs, not Crocs, she writes underlined. Good news, though, in the bottom right-hand corner of the page. P.S., you don't have to get all this. She's definitely got a sense of her own style. Even when she was like 4 or 5 years older, Grandma would take her to Goodwill, and Tally worked those racks, finding the tights with the pink hearts on them and quickly sussing out which things Grandma would agree to and which she wouldn't. We played store with her back then, too. She had a plastic cash register, and like anybody with a cash register, she liked to keep it ringing. The thing had come with a wad of little bills, which she generously distributed so you'd have all the money you'd need to buy whatever she sold. In one version, her grandma cut out construction paper, apples, bananas, bottles of milk. Gail was a preschool teacher for years, so she really had it down. And she's rolling pretty well, too, better than I am, with the new preteen queen. Unlike Natalia, Gail was never a girly girl, never was much into dolls or playing house. She grew up the only girl in a house full of brothers, then raised two sons, so shopping with Natalia and shopping for her is a gift beyond measure. I remember once in Savers down in the cities, she found an outfit, pants and shirt, just Tally's size and style. Do you think I should get this for her? She asked me rhetorically. Then it goes from the rack to the cash register, to the car, back to where we're spending the night, back to the car, home again to be set aside until it's time to wrap and put under the tree. Gail must have handled and admired and fussed with this thing so many times. No, wait, let me rephrase that. Gail must have handled and admired and fussed with this adorably cute outfit dozens of times. Very much, I thought, like a little girl playing with her dolly's clothes. And no spendthrift. She's a careful shopper, Natalia's grandma is. It's just that what she spends, she converts into those high-value currencies of exchange. Laughter, hugs, look what I got for you.
You're the top, you're the Colosseum. You're the top, you're the Louvre Museum. You're a melody from a symphony by Strauss. You're a Bender bonnet, a Shakespeare sonnet. You're Mickey Mouse. You're the smile on the Mona Lisa. I'm a worthless check, a total wreck of flair. Honey, baby, I'm the bottom, you're the top. You're the top, you're my half. Brandy, you're the purple light of a summer night in Spain. You're the National Gallery, your Garbo salary, your cellophane. You're sublime, you're turkey. The Derby winner. I'm a a toy balloon that is faded soon to something I gotta tell you.
What is it, Judy?
Well, you're the top.
I am?
You're Waldorf Sandler.
Oh, no, no, let me say it. You're the top.
Me too?
That's right. You're a Berlin ballet.
Oh, that's nice. You're the nimble tread of the feet of Fred Astaire.
Actually, I don't dance very well.
You are an O'Neill drama.
You're Whistler's mother.
Mama.
Sorry.
You're Cannon.
You're a rose.
Sweet. You're Inferno's Dante.
That's an intellectual reference. You're the nose.
Watch it.
I mean.
What?
I
what?
Mean,
what?
I'm the great Durant.
That's better. I'm a lazy lout who is just about to stop.
Let's not stop.
But baby, I'm the bottom.
She's the one for me. You're the top.
That's Barbara Streisand with Ryan O'Neill. It's the Get Ready for Christmas edition of Stay Human, and it's time to go get a tree. Our next two stories were performed at a storytelling show at Clocko Brewing. It featured Stay Human storytellers who had worked together workshopping their stories with the American School of Storytelling. First up, Maury Nellis.
You know, I've had a lot of jobs in my life. Back in the day, I sold Christmas trees at Bob's Famously Fresh Christmas Trees. I knew Bob from college days. We kind of lost track, and then I ran into him again in the 80s and found out he'd moved to Aiken County and had become an entrepreneur and had a tree lot in St. Paul. I had qualifications for that job, and I needed a job. Qualification number one, I knew about trees. I knew about, it's particularly Christmas trees. Number two, I needed money. Number three, and this is most important, I had the outfit. You laugh, but you don't know. I mean, and this was handed down. I had the classic red and black plaid wool pants, shirt, jacket, hat. That outfit had been all over Itasca County, up around Big Fork, hunting deer on my grandfather, and when he passed away, it became mine, and now I was wearing it on the tree lot. So I had the look of a real tree slayer, as we called it on the lot, you know, with kudos or reference to James Fenimore Cooper. We knew what we were talking about. We were tree slayers, not deer slayers. We were a scruffy, scrappy band of underemployed college graduates and young rural Finns from Aiken County. And somehow we meshed together to supply Christmas trees to the urban dwellers in St. Paul, Minnesota. You know, if you were there, you would have seen this happen. It was amazing. We swept into town like a cheap carnival, set up our racks made out of birch poles to look authentic. We stacked up what I seemed like thousands of trees. Maybe it was only hundreds, seemed like thousands, they were heavy. Sales started the day after Thanksgiving, ended abruptly Christmas Eve. No one needs a Christmas tree after Christmas Eve, right? Sad but true. We worked every day from dawn till long after dark, 30 days in a row at least. Bob's famously fresh Christmas trees actually might still exist, but at that time, we were located on the site of an old used car lot on Grand Avenue between one old apartment complex and another old apartment complex. We were near, you know, just a stone's throw from Summit Ave, where all the old money was piled up, and not too far away from Selby Avenue and Summit Hill, where the young urban professionals were revitalizing those neighborhoods. The well-to-do would drive up on their Mercedes, you know, and the normal folks would either walk over to the lot or drive in on their beat-up used cars. They had one thing in common, actually two things in common. Even the rich people were looking for a good deal, and they were looking for an authentic experience. Our trees were fresh from Aiken County, harvested, well, mostly harvested by genuine Finnish Americans. We provided hot cider. We even provided roasted chestnuts. I can't eat roasted chestnuts anymore, and this is 40 years ago. I ate so many of those, oof. Never again. And nonstop lore about Christmas trees. When selling, I often like to highlight my personal mystical Finnish family traditions. I had an Irish friend who used to tell me, "Yeah, Maury, I know, you Finns, you stand there on the edge of the spruce swamp or balsam bog, staring, brooding, and communing with the trees for hours." Yeah, that's pretty much true, at least in my family. I've got a great picture of me and my three-year-old daughter and my Finnish grandmother all sitting in the living room, and my daughter and I are brooding. My daughter is a great natural brooder. She got the brooding genes from me. And my grandmother is laughing because she can't figure out what the hell is going on. We sold spruce, balsam, Norway, white pines. Then people wanted what they called full trees. It's like, what the hell is a full tree? They want a tree with lots of branches evenly spaced so they can hang their ornaments. Trees don't necessarily grow that way, so people in the industry, smart, trying to make a living, trying to make some money, started shearing their trees in the off season years ahead of time to encourage the tree to grow more branches or in a tighter configuration. At Bob's Famously Fresh, we call those trees tortured trees. And the other aspect there then is, so you have a torture tree, but it's got to have that symmetrical shape. You know, if you've seen a soft serve ice cream cone, the one people like to dip in sprinkles or chocolate, they wanted a tree that was shaped kind of like a dip cone. So we called those trees dip cone trees. And then finally, there was a remnant from the past, not even that prevalent in the 80s. People would spray their pines, especially Scotch pines. They'd spray a coating they'd called flocking. They'd flock the tree with exotic colors, you know, so it would look like something from a Las Vegas lounge. Or for the tree slayers at Bob's, that was considered perverse. And we called those trees molested trees. Trees sold for $10 a foot. The bigger tree, the bigger the tree, the more money we made. But there were also trees for those whose budgets were challenged. Uh-oh, this is the tongue twister now. We created, or actually Bob created, I think I helped name, Bob's Bargain balsam balcony where you could get a wild swamp balsam for $20. Size wasn't really the issue. It was just if you find one in the balcony you like, $20. We gave you a fresh cut on the base and tied it on top of your car for free. Unfortunately, selling can be a challenge. We had many people come in from the city and they expect that you are going to show them trees personally, kind of a guided tour around the tree lot. You could spend an hour holding up 20, 30, 40 Christmas trees to people, and then in the end they decide, well, the one I really liked was the first one. Woof. There were regulars also over the years I was there. Bob got popular, the lot got popular, and people showed up every year. People like, there was an exotic woman who showed up every year. She had a wide-brimmed hat, kind of shaded her face. I couldn't pick her out of a crowd now. I never really recognized her. She had a long cashmere coat, so she obviously had some scratch, as they say. Well, yes, and she spoke in a soft German accent. She would only let Bob show her trees, and Bob was the only one who was allowed to deliver trees to her house. The rest of the crew, we called her the Countessa, Lady of Mystery. Because of my outfit, I was interviewed on TV news many times. People thought I was famously Fresh Bob. And then they'd ask me, well, where do you live up north? And I was an honest salesman. I had to own up and tell them, well, actually, I live about 3 blocks away in an apartment. Have got relatives up north, though. The tree slayer mystique seemed to create romantic notions for some. There'd be women who would come multiple times to look at trees and chat before eventually, finally buying a tree. And there were women who seemed to be drawn to my woolly, rustic look. And they would mention my sweet, piney scent. I was frequently invited out for cocktails after work. Amazing. Unfortunately, after Christmas Eve, the spirit of Christmas present disappeared, and I had to fold up my suit and put it away and go back to living normal life.
Thanks to Maureen Ellis at the Authentic Voice Storytelling Concert. The tellers at that show were coached by nationally known storyteller Lauren Neamey, who also hosted the event. Here's what Maury's story reminded him of.
You know, you can get the tree at the lot, or someone can say to you, let's have an adventure. Let's go out and cut the tree ourselves. I did that once. Went with a couple of friends, piled in the Jeep, drove out to some tree farm, not quite as far as Aiken, but certainly a good 60 or 80 miles north of the Twin Cities. Parked the truck. The guy says, yeah, any tree, and hands us a saw. And sends us off into the snow. Around the parking lot, the snow is like knee deep. But in the wild, suddenly we're into thigh-high snow or waist-high snow, and we're trying to gauge trees. When you're in the wild, they all look the same damn height. Except for the really little ones, and my friends are going, no, not that one, too small. So we found a tree. about a mile and a half away from the parking lot. We sawed it, and then we have to drag it back. Carry it, drag it, carry it, drag it, carry it, drag it back. And when we get to the lot, and the man says, all right, it's $10 a foot, and he pulls out the tape measure, and suddenly we're saying, my God, it's $100. Not only that, but it's longer than the truck. And we say, well, if we just cut off 2 feet, does it change the price? And the answer was, not really. But you can take the 2 feet with you as a bonus. So the 2 feet were cut off, the 8 foot was put on top of the truck, and the 2 feet of extra bonus was shoved in the back of the Jeep. And we started driving back to the cities, driving back to the cities. I'll tell you a little secret, which you probably already know. At 60 miles an hour, it doesn't make any difference how tied the tree is. There was that moment where we heard this sound like, and looking in the rearview mirror, we could see the tree lifting up, off, and heading north again. We had to turn the truck around and try to relash the tree. Finally, someone said, screw putting it on the roof, open the back end of the Jeep, shove the tree into the Jeep, and make the rest of the journey. I would like to say that that tree was duly appreciated. But what was appreciated was the fact that we finally just were done. So,
thanks to Laura and Mimi. You can find more at AmericanSchoolOfStorytelling.com. And thanks to Maury Nellis, Sue Searing, Corey Kologi, and Doris Kologi for helping us stay human today. I'm Michael Goldberg, back this time next week with another hour of story and song, and by then, I'll be ready for Christmas.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Heidi Holton. Coming up next, we've got Native Lights Podcast, where Native voices shine. That's followed by brand new from KEXE, the Season Watch Pod, connecting you with the delights of nature. This is 91.7 KEXE, Grand Rapids, and 90.5 KBXE, Bagley, Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, people-powered radio in northern Minnesota, with translator K210DR in Brainerd, 89.9. You can listen at KEXE.org or on your smart speaker. Thanks for keeping us going. Help us out with your donation. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. And thank you.
Bonjour, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Pono Asuncion, an interdisciplinary artist, storyteller, illustrator, and culture bearer, drawing inspiration.